Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Suvos is daf Mem Tes. We're on Mem Ches Amud Aleph, the very bottom. We're starting the Mishnah, starting with the words La'olam on the very bottom of Mem Ches Amud Aleph. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on Zeichon Ishmael Slipik Gabriela Bashmuel. And the Mishnah begins. La'olam Yerushas Av. She's in the domain. She's under the jurisdiction of the father. Achit Tekhanes. L'rishus habal, until she goes to the domain, to the jurisdiction of the husband. We know. We've been discussing now from the beginning of the Masechta. This is the Daf Memches. So 48 blad. This is 7 weeks now in the making, where the we've been having a discussion in the Gemara about the second stage of marriage and Nisuin. Our Masechta, Masechta Ksuvos, is dedicated to the second stage of marriage, and that is Nisuin. How do you get from the point of Erusin to the point of Nisuin? So again, like we've said over a number of times, to get to the point of Erusin, that's very clear. The Mishnah and Kiddushin, meaning we haven't done Masechta Kiddushin yet. Meaning in stages, obviously Masechta Kiddushin should be learned before Masechta Ksuvos, but you know, as I pointed out a number of times already, that's not the way the order of the Masechtas go. The most notable reason why, as I pointed out, it's not... Nothing that dramatic, but it has to do with the fact that Ksuvos is a large Masechta. The larger Masechtas are done first, the smaller Masechtas are done later. So Kiddush only has 4 Prakim, and Ksuvos has 13 Prakim. Right. Okay, anyway, but we're now at the second stage of marriage. And so now for the last 7 weeks, we've been describing various halachas about the second stage of marriage. But now we're talking about entrance into the second stage of marriage. In other words, it's a very simple discussion that we're having. And that is, it's not going to be that simple. But just understand that what we're discussing right now is, how do you get to the second stage of marriage? What exactly is it? I made this point a number of times. It's one of those points you can't say enough, and that is Kiddushin. The Mishnah on Kiddushin says very clearly what exactly is Kiddushin is. It's Kesef, it's Shtar, it's Bia. It's very technical. And the reason why it's so technical is because it's a kinyan. It's an acquisition. It creates a status of going from unmarried to married, and so therefore it's very technical. Once you're now at the point of Erusin, where you are now married, to transfer from Erusin to Nisuin, so we're going to throw around the term chuppah. Chuppah is a term which, quite honestly, isn't even a term used in the Mishnayos. I mean, forget the fact that the Torah doesn't even discuss the term chuppah. Truth of the matter is, the Mishnayos don't even really discuss chuppah as well. But in other words, but generally, the sense that we know is that when she enters the chuppah, when she enters his chuppah, so now they're married. What exactly that means? So again, the Gemara and the Mishnayos are not particularly clear. So the Rishonim try to navigate through what exactly is that moment. Can we try to pinpoint that moment where they go from the stage of Erusin to the point of Nisuin? So bridal canopy, Yichud, Bedekin, meaning there are numerous opinions amongst the Rishonim what exactly this point of Chuppah is. So to put it simply, we're not, meaning from the Mishnah standpoint, from the Gemara standpoint, we're not perfectly clear what exactly chuppah is. But in this Mishnah, we're going to be describing, however, that when she changes from going from her father to her husband, so at that point in time, everything changes. Or as we're going to point out in just a moment as we get to the Gemara, almost everything changes. So in other words, this change of jurisdiction is going to make a change for her forever. Now, keep in mind, by the way, we talk about change of jurisdiction, meaning... And again, this is a general point, an overarching point that deals with our Masechta. When she's an Arusa, she's married, but she's still living in her parents' home. Meaning, as an Arusa, she's married, but she's still basically under the domain of her father. Right? She makes a neder, her father has the rights, not exclusive, but the father has the right to annul the dharma she makes. As an Arusa, if she gets a divorce at that point in time, she goes back to her father's house. Meaning she's still basically, even though she's married, she's still basically under the jurisdiction of her father. It's only when she goes into the second stage of marriage of Nisuin, where now she makes a transfer from being a betrothed woman under the arena of her father to that of a fully married woman. Lagabe, what halachas are we talking about? Many halachas, which we're going to be articulating in just a moment. So the Mishnah over here is just talking about now this idea of when exactly this move is made. So again, we're just going to reread the first line of the Mishnah. She's always, meaning always, she is under the jurisdiction of her father until until she goes into the domain of her husband for nisuin, for the second stage of marriage. Right? Talk about a vague language of the Mishnah. But okay, now let's try to wrap our heads around what this actually means. The Mishnah then goes on. Let's say the father hands her over to the agents of the husband. She is now in the domain of the husband. Right? Imagine, meaning we're trying to pinpoint exactly when this point occurs, when this transfer occurs from being an Arusa to being a Nesua. And the Mishnah gives a description of, well, she's going to be handed over to the agents of the husband. You know what that means? It means the husband's not even there. Meaning that the husband said, look, there's my wife. She's my Arusa. You know what? Do me a favor. As my agent, right? As an extension of me, could you go out and could you bring her back to me? And so they go and they pick her up. So the moment she goes with the shlichim, she now becomes a nesua. That's what it sounds like from the Mishnah. Okay. And again, it once again begs the question. So where exactly does this transfer take place? Him and her don't even have to be alone, according to the Mishnah, in order for this transfer of status to occur. Okay, so again, I know it's very difficult. I know conceptually it'd be much neater if we had more. If the Mishnah here were slightly more detailed, but okay, that's what we have to work with. So Masar Av L'Shluch Eba Harei Brishos Abal Halacha Av Im Shluch Eba. However, if the father is still escorting her together with the agents, so that means that the father still has not relinquished control. That means that the father still is in the picture. Osha Achu Shluch Eba Im Shluch Eba. Or let's say the father sent Shlichim. So in other words, so she's not alone now with the agents of the husband. She's now with the agents of her father and the agents of the husband. She's still now under the domain of the father. Now, again, when we get to the Gemara, we're going to be discussing what all this means practically speaking. The Mishnah is speaking in very conceptual terms, in terms of father's domain, husband's domain. We're going to speak brass tacks. We're going to talk in practical sense when we get to the Gemara. So, once the agents of the father hand her over to the agents of the husband, she's now in the domain of the husband. Period. Adkan divrei haMishnah. That is the Mishnah. So the first thing the Gemara tackles is that first word of the Mishnah. The first word of the Mishnah is la'olam. La'olam is obviously trying to make a powerful statement. The word la'olam in the Mishnah is saying this is it until. What's it? So the Gemara goes on to explain. My la'olam. So the first things first, just explain the first word of the Mishnah. So la'afukim mishnah rishona dinan. So you remember the Mishnah rishona. Mishnah rishona is always a term that's used in the Gemara, in the Mishnayos, that describes how we used to think, meaning that there was a line of thinking that used to be the accepted line of thinking, going all the way back to the Tanayim, and then it was rejected. What was the original line of thinking? So if you remember, 48 short days ago, day one of the Masechta, we quoted this Mishnah. Didnan, the Mishnah says, Higiyaz mavalo nisu ochlos mishlov ochlos mitruma. Remember the Mishnah said the following. We generally go a year, not nowadays, but back in the good old days. We went a year from Erisin to Nisuin. And it was a year, meaning a calendaric year, date to date. So in other words, if the Erisin occurred, what's today? Today's the third day of Nisan? Mm-hmm. Okay, so today's the third day of Nisan. So if the Erisin took place on the third day of Nisan, a year from now, third day of Nisan, 1 year from now, Nisuin. What if the third day of Nisan, a year from now, he calls in sick and he says, look, I'm really sorry, but a little cold, fever. Look, I'd love the wedding for it to occur today, but I'm just not feeling well. So he calls in sick. So we know that all the financial obligations of a husband to his wife begins at the point of Nisuin. So what if he calls in sick? So the Mishnah says, the Mishnah Rishona says, so she could start eating truma. Meaning we're going to treat them as if they are actually married, even though they didn't go through the Nisuin. Right? And even though he's got what seems to be a legitimate excuse, right? He's coughing a little bit. I'm exaggerating. In other words, he's really sick. Let's say he's really sick. So the Mishnah Rishona says it doesn't matter. She can enjoy the truma at that point, from that point going forward, as if they were actually married. That's Mishnah Rishona. Kamash malan la'olam. Our Mishnah tells us we reject that opinion, meaning that in order for her to eat truma, they have to not on the books be married, they actually have to, they have to be married. Meaning that the marriage must actually occur, the nisuin must actually occur in order for it to eat truma. That is what is being taught in our Mishnah.
Why did he use the plural of lot? It should say that
ochelet. No, you're right. In other words, the word ochelet means generally. Right? The Gemara says ba'alma, meaning that any woman in this circumstance is going to be able to eat truma. For good. Okay, Masar av l'shulcha ba'al harei b'rishos ha'ba'al v'chule. Amar Rav, misira sal l'kol chutz mitruma. So now, what is our Mishnah describing? Our Mishnah gives a description of her being handed over to the agents of the husband. So again, she's making this transfer from being an Arusa to being an Asua. Now I know, the magic word really we're looking for is the word Chuppah. And we're not going to find it. It's a magic word which you can look for it and you're not going to find it. That word is not being used in the Mishnah. The Mishnah over here has a term that she's being transferred. In other words, so it's not even that she's in the domain of the husband. She's being transferred to the agents of the husband. But the Mishnah says, that's it. Meaning once she gets transferred, once she gets handed over from one agent to another agent, she now is married, says the Mishnah. Marriage meaning second stage of marriage. So again, what does that mean halachically? So Rav says it for everything, except for truma. Meaning she cannot eat truma yet. When can she eat truma? At what point exactly? Chuppah. Meaning when she actually goes into his house and is under his roof, then and only then she can eat truma. Why? Why should that be? So Rashi explains the reason why is because Rav is of the opinion that let's take a step back. When min haTorah is she allowed to eat truma? Meaning she married a kohen. She's not a kohen. She married a kohen. When can she eat truma min haTorah? Really, the point of Erison. Meaning because what is the guideline of the Torah in terms of when a person is entitled to eat truma? Either you're a kohen or you're kinyan kaspo. You're the acquisition of a kohen. So when she gets married and when she goes through Erisin, so at that point in time, really min haTorah, she's allowed to eat truma. The Chachamim said to her, no, you need to wait. Why did the Chachamim say you need to wait till the second stage of marriage? So that part is not clear. That's subject to a debate. There are two opinions. One opinion is because the Chachamim were concerned that what's going to end up happening is at the first end of marriage, he's going to make a discovery about her physically that she didn't tell him, and it was something that she should have told him. She didn't tell him, and he said, oh my gosh, I can't believe you didn't tell me about this. Had I known about this, I never would have got married. Otherwise known as a mekachtos. And so therefore what's going to end up happening is that if she had been eating truma for the past year as a narusa, so now the marriage has been annulled all the way from the beginning, and all that truma she ate was not within her right to eat. Somebody eating truma that does not have the right to eat truma is subject to misa bidei shamayim. Obviously very serious. So therefore the Chachamim said that let's wait till marriage to make sure that this marriage is not going to be revoked. Because after the first night of the marriage, so there's no turning back. Meaning, then after that point in time, he can't claim Mekachtos. That's one reason why the Chachamim said she can't eat Truma from Erisin to Nisuin. A second reason that's given, in terms of why an Arusa cannot eat Truma, is because, where is she living during Erisin? She's still living in her family's house. So imagine, every time she goes visits her Arus, her betrothed. So he's a Kohen, he's eating Truma. Oh, right, you want to join me? Sure, go ahead, have a seat. Leftovers, you know what, here's a bag, go take it home. Right, enjoy the leftovers. She takes it home with her. Now she's eating Truma in her father's house. She's coming from a family that are not Kohanim. And look what I got from my Arus. This wonderful, wonderful Truma. It's delicious. Oh, you want some? And she may share with her family. So the Chachamim said another possible reason why it is that a Arusa cannot eat Truma. So again, either because of Mekachtos or because she's going to share it with her family. So as Rashi points out over here, that's exactly the machlokus between Rav and Rav Asi. We haven't seen Rav Asi yet, but we'll see him right now in just a second. But first, let's go over the Shita of Rav. Rav says that when she's being transferred over from the agents of the father to the agents of the husband, she is married, Nesua, for all intent and purpose, except for Truma. Why? Because Rav's of the opinion, explains Rashi, that she can't eat truma because of a possible mekachtos. You have to wait until she goes into the husband's house, first night of marriage, then after that, she's allowed to eat truma. Good. That's the opinion of Rav. Rav Asi Amar, back to the Gemara, af l'truma. Rav Asi says that once you have the transfer from agent to agent, she can now eat truma. Why? Explains Rashi. Because what's behind the opinion of Rav Asi? The only reason why the Chachamim prohibit her from eating Truma as an Arusa is because she may share it with her family. Once we have a transfer, that's it. She is now separated. Separated over here, I don't mean in the vernacular. Separated meaning she's no longer in the jurisdiction of her father. She's no longer connected to her family. She now has moved out to her husband. So at that point in time now, there's no longer a concern. There's no need to be a concern that she's going to go back and share the truma with her family. So, but both according to Rav and Rav Asi, marriage is for nearly everything, all the halachas of Nisuin, with exception of, at least according to Rav, with exception to Truma, and Rav Asi says, no, she can even eat Truma. Eisei Revuna l'Rav Asi, v'amala chia barav l'Rav Asi, l'olam hibur shosavashi tikanas l'chopah. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa, and the Braisa says that she's in the domain of the father until she enters into the chuppah. So, okay, there we have a Braisa that uses the word chuppah, the magic word chuppah. So, good. But it sounds like from the Braisa that that she is not going to have a change of status until she enters the chuppah. Meaning that the transfer from one agent to another agent is simply insufficient. Amlu Rav Lava Minalachus. Rav says, that's not a challenge. Meaning, that's a Braisa that seems to go against what Rav Asi is saying. Rav says just the opposite. Lo tisul basar ibcham. And don't ever, Rav says, and don't ever challenge me based on a braisa that could go in the and the opposite direction. There's no clarity in that braisa. It's an ambiguous braisa. So yachlushu misirasuzuikinisalchuppa. And what Rav says, what I will tell you is the following. Do you know what chuppah means? Chuppah just simply means transfer. Meaning, once she's being transferred from one to the other, that is going to be like the same status of chuppah. So the so Rav says, I don't make much of that braisa. I still think that you could support the opinions of Rav Asi and Rav regarding once she gets transferred, she's married. Shmuel Amar liYerushasa. Shmuel says that when we talk about being this transfer of the father's agents to her agents, it doesn't mean that she now is a married woman. It just means Yerusha. What does that mean, Yerusha? So, let's say, for example, now again, we know that when a woman gets married, so the father of the bride throws a lot of money into the marriage, otherwise known as a dowry. And the dowry that the father throws into the marriage is actually written into the ksuva, meaning this is what the father is bringing, the father of the bride is bringing into the marriage. Whatever, property, assets, whatever he puts in. Nadunya, it's a dowry. If the wife dies, the husband inherits all those assets. Okay, that's part of the Gemara says a number of times. Part of the attractiveness of a wife is the dowry that comes together with her. Okay, the Gemara says a number of occasions. We just learned it a couple of days ago. That's why the daughter gets to keep her payers, so that she'll have. If she doesn't have a father, she gets to keep her payers, so that she has some sort of dowry. Okay, she can create a trust to create some sort of dowry. Anyway, so the husband is going to inherit. When is the husband going to inherit the dowry? Not after the first stage of marriage, but only after Nisuin, only after the second stage of marriage. So Shmuel says that this Messiah that we're describing over here doesn't mean that they entered into the second stage of marriage. It only means that if in the event at this point in time, at this moment, she dies, so then the husband is going to inherit the dowry. Reish Lakish Amar L'Ksuvasa. Reish Lakish says it impacts the Ksuva. Now, what does that mean? Ksuva samai. That's Gemara's next question. Di mesa yarisla hainu deshmol. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that he inherits the ksuva? He inherits the dowry? Well, that's exactly what Shmuel just said. Hard to imagine that Reish Lakish is just saying the same thing using different terminology. Am ravina lama ksuva samai achemana. No, what it means is as follows. According to Shmuel, it means now that she's married for the next ksuva that's written for her. Meaning we know. What's the difference between a woman receiving a 200 ksuva and a 100? Whether she's a pasula or bre'ula. But it doesn't really mean whether she's a virgin or a non-virgin. What it really means is, was she married or was she not married? Marriage meaning second stage of marriage. What Reish Lakish is arguing is that once you have this part, this point of Mesira, for her next ksuva, it's considered as if she was married, and therefore the ksuva, her next ksuva is going to be 100. Okay, so once again, here's the question. We know that a woman enters into the second stage of marriage at a point known as chuppah. Again, a word that the Mishnah doesn't describe, doesn't use, but that's clear. A clear meaning, as clear as we're going to make it. So she enters into the second stage of marriage, chuppah. What about when the agents of the father are handing over to the agents of the husband? Is she married? It sounds like from the Mishnah the answer to that question is yes, she is married. And then what the Amoraim are discussing now is, how much are we going to call this a marriage? So Rav and Rav Asi basically say she's fully married at that point in time. At this point in Mesir, she's fully married. And what they argue about is her ability to eat Truma. Rav says she can. Sorry. Rav says she can't. Rav Asi says she can. But essentially, this Mesir is where they're married. Shmuel and Reish Lakish, but really more Shmuel, says, no, they're not. No, they're not married. What it simply means is that for one halacha, we're going to treat her as if she's married. Meaning Shmuel's opinion is that as it relates to him inheriting her dowry, from that perspective, we'll call them married. But Lagabi, all the other halachas, they're not yet married, second stage of marriage. And Reish Lakish says that from this point going forward, if let's say she gets widowed or divorced, and she gets married again, because there was a Mesira, so therefore her next ksuva is only going to be 100. Okay.
Because it's financial situation?
Hmm?
Is it because it's for financial thing?
You're right. Right. Why would it only impact that particular halacha?
He sent an agent and got the wife. Maybe it's a financial deal.
It could be. I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I'm not sure. Her next ksuva? Because she was married. Meaning the halacha is
cohabitated because the husband died.
Totally understood. Meaning, but the idea of a ksuva of an almana is that she was a widow from marriage, and with or without bia. Your point is very good. Your point is beyond very good. I understood. It's a chiddush. But the idea is that mesira is this. We're in some sort of, you know, we're post erusin. And right before Nisuin, right before the chuppah, and basically we're trying to figure out where are we in terms of her status of being quote-unquote married, second stage.
Shmuel does not allow eating of truma.
Yeah, that's clear. Shmuel will not allow her to eat truma.
Even with the agent.
You're right, correct. Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Chanin, Amar Tavai Mesira, Sala Kol Afla Truma. Now Rav Yochanan and Rabbi Chanin say, no, she's married, fully married, meaning this Mesira, being handed over from one agent to another agent, creates a full marriage. She's even allowed to eat Truma, makes Veda Gemara here, quotes a Braisa. And this Braisa is going to be present a very serious problem to the opinions of Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, and by extension also Rav and Rav Asi. Then the Gemara quotes, Halach Av Im Shluch Habal. Let's say dad still hasn't relinquished. Dad is walking alongside the agents of the husband. Or let's say the agents of the father walking alongside the agents of the husband. Or let's say they stop on the way, but they stop in her chatzir. So, even if the ksuvan is in her father's house, when the ksuvan is written, doesn't matter. They're not married yet. Mesa, avia yorsha. And the clearest way to indicate that they're not married yet, and again, please understand, when I say they're not married yet, meaning I'm talking strictly right now about the second stage of marriage, meaning they've already undergone erusin. So from a standpoint of arusa, yes, they're betrothed, which for many halachas means they're married. We are talking about the second stage of marriage when all the financial components of that second stage of marriage kick in. The Gemara says, as long as dad or an agent of dad is tagging along, they're not married. And that means then that Mesa, Avia Yosha. If she dies at that point in time, dad's going to take back the dowry. It has not been, that dowry has not been transferred over. So now let's do all the contrasting scenarios. Let's say there was a total transfer. The dad handed it over to the agents. The agents of the father handed it over to the agents of the husband. Sorry, let me emphasize the right word. Or let's say he had a courtyard. And they spend the night in his courtyard. Even though the ksuva is in her father's house. Meaning she's not holding the ksuva, it doesn't matter. It was written, Mesa Ba'ala Yersha. So now if she died at that point in time, the husband inherits her because there was a transfer, and therefore the husband's going to inherit her. But then the Braisa is about to state it as clearly as we have seen it so far. What does this mean? Does this mean they're married? The Braisa says no. All it means is that he's Yerisher. But but in terms of her ability to eat truma, she can't eat truma until the point of chuppah. Chuppah is the point where she can eat truma. So, tiyufta dekula tiyufta. Now we had a brisa, and the brisa says it very clearly that this point of mesira only affects the halachas of him yarshening the ksuva, but doesn't allow her to eat truma. Ravasi. I'm sorry, Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, they were all of the opinion that she can eat truma from this point of Mesira. The Braisa says she can't. The Gemara says it's irrefutable. Tiyufta dekula, tiyufta, it's a tiyufta on everybody. Rashi points out, by the way, not everybody, meaning Shmuel is very happy with this Braisa. This Braisa is saying exactly what Shmuel was saying, that it only affects the halachas of Yerusha, it doesn't affect the other halachas of marriage. And does it work with Rav's opinion? Right. I was wondering, Hedy, it's a great question. I was wondering that, and if you're right, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says Shmuel's very happy with this. Rashi doesn't make a comment about Rav.
It goes along with Rav's.
I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you. Okay, just, it's a good point. I'll think about it more, but I don't know. Tiyufta dekula tiyufta. Agufa kasha. The Gemara just clarifies one part of the brisa, and that is Amart nechlesayim olalin taima delalin hastam l'shem nisuin. Meaning they go into the chatzer. If they go into her chatzer for the purpose of just staying the night, meaning just a stopover. What if they went into her chatzer with the express purpose of this is nisuin? So it sounds like good. So I am a seifa. But then let's go on to the next part of the brisa, which is nechnasim ol l'shem nisuin. If they go into his chatzer for the purpose of nisuin, hastam alalin, which means then that without any express intent, it just simply means that they're stopping over for the night. So I'm Rav Ashi, stami stami katani. So the Gemara, so Rav Ashi says, no, let's not overanalyze the brisa. The Bryce is just telling us generically what is the generic thought process of if we go into her chatzer versus we go into his chatzer. If they stop over in her chatzer, so then it's just a stopover, meaning it's not for the purposes of nisuin. The Gemara says, stam chatzer dida lalin. Stam chatzer didei l'nisuin. If they go into her chatzer, so again, generically, it means just to stay over the night before they move on. If they, however, are stopping in his chatzer, so then that's for the purpose of nisuin, and that's what we would call classically chuppah, and then from that point forward, they would be married. Tana. We learned on a braisa. Masar av l'shulchei abal v'zinsa arizeh b'chanek. Okay. We've discussed this halach already a number of times. A woman commits adultery, that's a capital crime, she's put to death. By the way, as is a man who is involved in the act of adultery as well. We're focusing on the woman for the following reason. A woman who commits adultery, so she's going to get generally speaking, she'll get the regular punishment in the Torah for adultery, which is chenek, she'll be strangled to death, asphyxiated. However, we know, we've seen this already a number of times, the Torah is very clear, that if she's a nara hamurasa, if she was committing adultery while two variables. Number one, she's in the state of Nara. Number two, she's betrothed, meaning she didn't enter the second stage of marriage. So there, it is a more serious crime. Now, why it's a more serious crime? So the Gemara has not shared that information in terms of why it's a more serious crime. The Torah says it is. I'm postulating. Okay, so big disclaimer. These are my thoughts. Take it for whatever they're worth. I postulate that it's a bigger crime because she's really disappointing two people now. Meaning, she's married, first stage of marriage. So in other words, it's an act of treason on her husband, but also, right, but also she's in her father's house. So also, not only is it a crime against her husband, so to say, but also she's in her father's house as well. So there really are two men in her lives who she's disappointing in doing so. I mean, significantly disappointing. So again, now, end the parentheses, that was my own idea. Maybe I'm right, who knows? Either way, it's a more serious crime, and therefore the capital punishment is going to be ratcheted up to skila. When does she lose the status of being a nara hamurasa? So the Braisa says, mesira, when she's being transferred over from the agents of the father to the agents of the husband. So now, if she commits adultery from that point going forward, what's the halacha regarding this woman? Chenek. Meaning, she's no longer under this category of Nara Murasa. She left the domain of the father, and therefore, if she commits adultery, so Chenek, she is put to death in the regular manner of an adulteress. Menahani Mele Gemara says, how do I know this? Am Rabbi Ami Bar Chama Amar Kral Liznos Beis Aviha. The Torah, when describing Skila, says she was Mizana while in her father's house. Pratle Mishemasar of Lishluche Habal. But once there was a transfer, even though she has not yet entered the chuppah of her husband, but once there's a transfer, so that's it. She's left the father's house. And therefore, if she commits adultery, chenek, not skila. Gemara says, look, we're going to darshan. Why not just go one more stage in her marriage? Meaning, look, we're trying to find the needle. Meaning, we're adjusting the needle in terms of when she's making that move from skila to chenek. And by the way, skila chenek, I know it's a funny discussion. Meaning, how we're going to put it to death. But there are just ways of trying to present when she is an arusa versus when she's a nesua. So right now we have the needle set at mesira, her transference. The Gemara says, why do you have to say that? Why don't we just push it over a little bit? Meaning, chuppah. Meaning, when she actually enters into the canopy of her husband. Maybe that's when she has moved from being a beis aviha skila candidate to now being a chenek candidate. So the Gemara says, Amarava, sorry. I'm back. V'lo nivala. Amarava. Amarli. Ami. Chuppah be'hejek siva. So the Gemara says, chuppah, what do you mean? That's obvious. Meaning, once we have a pasuk that we're able to darshan, I'm not going to go to all the way to the point of chuppah, because chuppah is obvious. And how do I know that chuppah is obvious? Because, because look how the Torah describes her. Meaning, her meaning the one who's a candidate for skila. She is a nara, besula, murasa, le'ish. So, and we're going to darshan each one of these. Nara v'lo begeris. So number one, she's only candidate for skila if she's a nara. Obviously excluding when she's a bogeris. Meaning if she committed adultery while as a bogeris, even as a betrothed woman, still, bogeris, she's not going to get skila. Number two, basula v'la ba'ula. She has to be a virgin, not a non-virgin. Fine. That also is very clear. And finally, ma'urasa v'la nesua. Betrothed, not married. Meaning her candidacy for skila is only going to be at the point of basula, sorry, at the point of arusa, not nesua. So the Gemara says, now wait a second, my nesua, what does that mean? So elam nesua ma'amishayna besula v'lo ba'ula. So do we mean nesua meaning that she had relations with her husband? That's already been covered. Meaning we already had that from the other drasha of besula not ba'ula. Elalav shenichnasa l'chuppah v'lo nivala. So by arusa, it must mean to the exclusion of chuppah. Once she enters into his canopy, so that means now that she is no longer an arusa. She's a nesua. So we already know that. So now we have another pasuk we're going to darshan. So what does that other pasuk tell us to do? It tells us to back it up just a little bit. How do you back up from chuppah? Answer, mesira. Once the agents of the father transfer over to the agents of the husband, so even though she is still in a pre-chuppah setting, she no longer is a candidate for skila. It's at that point in time now that her candidacy for skila has come to an end. She is now candidate for chenek, and she is now quote-unquote married. Now keep in mind, by the way, After all said and done, again, here's the known entities. Let's say this quickly. After Erusin, she's now in Arusa, fine. After she goes into the bridal canopy with her husband, she's now in Nesua, fine. And basically now there's kind of like a Beina Shmashas period that exists. Like, I don't know if you appreciate the analogy, but there's kind of like a Beina Shmashas period that exists where there is not clarity on that point of whether she's in Arusa and Nesua, and that's Mesira. That's when she's being transferred. Meaning, when the Shluch Eha Av hand her over to the Shluch Eha Baal, so at that point in time now, she's in some sort of, she has left dad, she's entering into the husband, but where exactly are we? Not perfectly clear. One thing we could say with clarity at the end of the discussion is that she's no longer a candidate for Skila. Because the Torah is very clear, to be a candidate for Skila, you have to be in the house of the father. She's no longer in the house of the father. To say that she's fully married, so again, go back to the beginning of today's daf, we're trying to wrap our head around the fact of whether or not she's fully married. The Braisa that we quoted just a couple of moments ago said, she can't eat truma. She doesn't, at the point of Mesir, she doesn't have the right to eat truma. So once again, does that mean that she's married for all other halachas, but she can't eat truma? So again, it's not perfectly clear. We know that something occurs at the Mesira. To say she's fully married is not perfectly accurate. To say she's an Arusa is also not perfectly accurate. So it's like kind of like there is a Beinus Mashos period at this point in time.
As you said, Beinus Mashos exists for Na'ara and Bulgaria. That was also different.
Right.
There's two because if she was in Na'ara, then she would have the same thing.
Correct. Now let's go to the top of Mem Testament of today's daf. The Ema Hecha de Hajra LaBeinasha Hajra LaMilsa Kamaisa. Okay. Erusin is not reversible. Right? Agreed? You don't have to. It's not. Nisuin is not reversible. Meaning once she enters into his chuppah, so that's also not a reversible stage. Is this Mesira? Is this point a reversible point or not? That's the Gemara's question. Rashi himself admits this is not one of the strongest questions the Gemara has asked. I can't say that. I have no right to say that. But Rashi says it, and I can quote Rashi. Right? Rashi writes. You see the first Rashi in the Amud. Ve'ena kushya kol kach. Ela diktani masnis and ari b'shusha baal mashma v'afila chazra min aderech lebeis avia kvar yatsim b'shusha av v'kevin delo nafkalan misir shluchin ela mikra yisera debeis avia. Rashi explains, look, how do we arrive at this conclusion? It's generated from what Rashi describes as kra yisera. It's an extra pasuk. So maybe the Gemara is entertaining, and Rashi admits, We're just going to entertain the idea. We're not really going to. We're not going to go that far into this idea. That Ema Hecha Dehadra Beis Avia Karana Bay VeImzinsa Te Beskila. Let's say after she was handed over to the agents of the husband, she says, "Just one second," and she runs back to the agents of the father. Is this at all reversible? Meaning, if now after having run back to the agents of the father, let's say she committed adultery. Is she going to go back to Skila? Again, we're just entertaining it. The Gemara will pretty quickly dismiss this. Amar Rav Ahu Kvar Paska Tanda Bei Rabbi Shmuel. The Gemara says, nope. This has already been accounted for. Tanda Bei Rabbi Shmuel. The Gemara here quotes a brisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel. V'nedah amana grusha kol asher asra al nafsha yakum alaha. When a woman is either a widow or a divorcee, and she makes a neder. So you know who's going to annul that neder? Nobody. Do you know why? Because there's nobody to annul that neder. Because she is a widow. She's a divorcee. To which the Gemara asks the obvious question. Who would have thought otherwise? If there is nobody there to annul the neder, so then of course the halach is, nobody's going to annul the neder. Gemara asks the obvious question. The Academy of Rabbi Yishmael asks the obvious question. Well, who did you think was going to know? Ela harei shemasar av l'shulchei baal, shemasar shulchei av l'shulchei baal, v'nisam la b'derech u'niskarsha, hechani korei ba beis avia shozu, o beis baala shozu. Gemara says, do you know what the Torah is describing? Our scenario. Where? What happened? She was handed over by the agents of the father to the agents of the husband, and it's at that point in time she either becomes a widow or divorcee. It's at that point in time, was she married? Yes. So that in the event now that she makes any neder from this point going forward, those are her nedarim, nobody can annul them. Upon exiting the domain of her father for one moment, shuvan yochala hafer. So now the father no longer has a right. So what do we learn from the Braisa Rabbi Shmuel? This is irreversible. Once she's handed over from the father's agents to the husband's agents, this is a point of no return. Amra Papa Vanami Tani, Rav Papa says, learn the same thing. The Braisa ends up by saying that she's in the house of the father. Again, the first points of the Braisa are crystal clear. Nara not a bogeris, besula not a beula, murasav lo nesu beves aviyah lemutemai. But this last point of the brisa, what is that addressing? Answers the Gemara, my love lemute master of l'shulchei baal. It's addressing where she was handed over from one agent to another agent. Amar Rav Nachman itzakaf anami tanin. The Gemara says another brisa that makes this very same point. The Gemara is hammering away at this point. Habal is just ish kevish nechnas to rishus habal nesuin alfa pishlo nivala hava Allah hareze. Once she's been handed over to the domain of her husband, she no longer is a candidate for skila. She's now a candidate for a chenek. Just 1 second. Nechnasa l'rishus habal be'alma, meaning being handed over into the domain of her husband, meaning not even chuppah, just a mesira, just leaving the father's domain is enough now to move her from being a candidate for skila to a candidate of chenek. Shema mina, the Gemara ends off very conclusively. Okay, yeah, Danny.
If it's irreversible, why can't you have truma?
So again, the truma may be based on a different consideration. The truma may be based on the fact that even though she leaves the father, but still, remember, the rabbis forbade her from eating truma because there may be something about her that she didn't reveal to her husband, which is only going to be discovered the first night. To which then that would be a mekach tos, and that would...
Just one second.
And that will undo the whole marriage, and then all that truma she ate was for naught. So truma may be based on a totally different consideration.
He can claim mekach tos even with the agent. He's an agent and he got the wife. He can still say...
Yeah, because she didn't... There was something about her physically that she didn't tell the husband. She didn't tell the agent, she didn't tell the husband. And then the point of discovery, and then...
And another question about all these cases with the agent, does it require a ketubah?
Does he?
The
ketubah was written already. Right. And the truth of the matter is, we'll learn later in the Masechta, we haven't said this yet, but the truth of the matter is that even if the ketubah wasn't physically written,
yes,
meaning tonight ketubah, meaning this is part of the understood preconditions of marriage.
Like in the case of Rivka given to Eliezer to give the strike.
Correct.
There was a ketubah, there was a ketubah.
So, I can't...
I can't possibly answer
that question, but... In other words, as a good way to think about it. Meaning, that's a very good way to think about what we're discussing right now. It's a great example. I should have thought of it. But good. So there, she was handed over.
Okay.
Good. So now,
she's considered wife of Yitzchak.
Yeah. So she's considered the wife of Yitzchak. Now again, to what degree? That's what we're trying to wrap our head around throughout this entire discussion. Yeah, but even if it's not actually written, yes, the ksuva is required. But even if it's not written, all the rules of ksuva are in force. Okay, let's start. Let's start the next Mishnah. Okay, ha'avin ochay b'mezonos bito. Okay, I know we start the Mishnah starts off with such a strong statement, and we're going to temper the statement over the course of the remainder of today's daf. We're not going to finish today's daf, unfortunately, but we're going to temper it. But right now, I'm going to leave it in its very raw state. And that is, a father is not obligated to support his daughter. Okay? I'm sorry. Rav Elazar ben Azari expanded in front of the Chachamim. B'Keren B'Yavne. In the yeshiva of Keren B'Yavne. Okay, everyone knows the history. If you don't know the history, go back to Brachos, Daf Lama Dalin, and review over there. But anyway, Habanim Yeshuva Habanis Yizonu. So the sons all inherit, and the daughters need to be supported. Now, I said the word need to be supported. I'm vague in the way I'm describing the Mishnah. Stay tuned. All this is going to be clarified. Just like the sons don't inherit until post-mortem of the father, so too, the daughters are not going to be supported until after the death of the father. But in other words, while the father's alive, he is not obligated to support his daughters. Wow. That's very raw. That's the halacha. Again, tomorrow when we resume, we'll start with the Gemara. We'll temper the statement, and we'll basically learn by the end of tomorrow, which is really should have finished today. We're going to learn by the end of tomorrow that there is on the books, there's not an obligation of a father to support his daughter, but the father is going to be supporting his daughter. And again, we'll explain the halacha much better tomorrow when we resume.